in one, and then we'll do the word by word synonyms. Vacha paramaya rajan madhogyar valgubhashitahai manojagraha vagya asasmita ponga vikshanahai. Okay, repeat. Iti. Thus. Vavena. With the intention. Sa. She. Bartuhu. Of the husband. Achachara. Performed. Asakrit.
Constantly.
Priyam, pleasing activities. Shushrushaya, with service. Anuragena, with love. Prashayena, with humility. Damena, with self-control. Cha, also. Mokja, with devotion. Paramaya, great. Rajan, O king. Manogyai, charming. Valgubhashitahai, with sweet words. Manaha, his mind. Jagraha, brought under her control. Bhavagya,
knowing his nature.
Sasmita, with smiling. Apanga vikshanahai, by glancing. So, translation, thinking in this way with a desire for a son to kill Indra. Diti began constantly acting to satisfy Kashyapa by her pleasing behavior. O king, Diti always carried out Kashyapa's orders very faithfully as he desired, with service, love, humility, and control, with words spoken very sweetly to satisfy her husband, and with smiles and glances at him. Diti attracted his mind and brought it under her control. Nice. So, purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. When a woman wants to endear herself to her husband and make him very faithful, she must try to please him in all respects. When the husband is pleased with his wife, the wife can receive all necessities, ornaments, and full satisfaction for her senses. Herein, this is indicated by the behavior of Diti. So, again. The diva vena sabardu atchachara sakripriyam shushru shayanuragena prashayena damena cha. So, omagana timidanda sha. Gananjana Shilakya Chakshur Udmiditam Yena Tasmai Shri Purveta Maha. So, I guess this is a class for a sannyasi to give. Actually, you certainly wouldn't want a grahasta to give this class. But anyway, I'm going to try to be non-controversial. So, let's talk about determination first before we get into the topic. Krishna in the Gita talks about determination in three modes of nature, right? So determination in the mode of goodness is like yoga practice. I must be Krishna conscious. I must be liberated from this material world. And that's firm determination, dridha vrittaha, isn't it? Vyavasayatmaka buddhya, ekeha kurunandana. And then that is, those who are on this path, the translation is, they're one-pointed A.K.A. Kurunandana, or best of the Kuru dynasty, that's Arjuna. So, in other words, in the mode of goodness, one's determination is fixed because of the goal of either Krishna consciousness or liberation, one of the two things. So Krishna consciousness is Shuddhashattva, liberation is sort of mixed goodness, but that's another issue. And then in the mode of passion, one's determination is there because of fruitive gain. Now here, we are hearing about determination in the mode of passion, right? Because she wants something. And she's very determined. This verse describes great determination, you know, with love, with humility, with dhamena, with self-control. Whew, that's pretty hard, because you want something. And of course, determination in the mode of ignorance is never goes beyond dreaming and procrastination. For example, devotees will say, some devotees will say, that I will be serious in devotional service later on when I get older. Right now, I have so many desires to work out. You ever hear this? Yeah, I hear it all the time. I have so many desires to work out, and then later on, you know, I will be Krishna conscious. Of course, that later on may be after you die. I was listening to a class this morning. Prabhupada was talking again. I'm listening to these conversations of Prabhupada with Mr. Patel in Bombay or Mumbai on the beach. And Mr. Patel was making the point that Krishna says in the Gita that yangam vapi smaram dharmam yajati antikaleva, or whatever you're thinking of the time of death, what? You can, that's where you go in the next life. So Mr. Patel was making the point, I just have to think of Krishna at the time of death. And Prabhupada said, that's nonsense. Not nonsense to think of Krishna, but it's nonsense to think that at the time of death, you can just like pull a switch. The rest of your life, you're just watching videos or whatever, and dancing at discos at night. And then all of a sudden, oh, it's death time. Okay, Hare Krishna. Doesn't work like that. You may not be so fortunate like Ajamil, because to describe the time of death, the bodily functions are dislocated, kapha, vata. That, you know, all the bodily functions, you're choking, you can't even remember who you are. Just like that. Sometimes I'm dealing with my mother who's 92 years old. She can't remember where she is. And she remembers me, that's about it. So can you imagine the time of death? Unless you're practiced to remember Krishna, cultivating Krishna consciousness, you're not going to be able to remember Krishna. So in other words, this procrastination doesn't work as far as Krishna consciousness is concerned. So, getting back to Diti, she's in the mode of passion, or her determination's in the mode of passion. So what we can learn from Diti here in this case is that if we want to be successful in Krishna consciousness, don't be in the mode of passion, but if you want to be successful in Krishna consciousness, you have to have some goal. Because both the mode of goodness and the mode of passion are goal-oriented. In other words, you're focused on what you want, your goal. So it's important for all the devotees to make goals for their lives, especially the goal of becoming Krishna conscious, or the goal of spreading Krishna consciousness, or the goal of pleasing the spiritual master. But you got to have some goal. Otherwise, it's bahu shaktas tvanantas cha. Your determination is many-branched. And then, ultimately, bhogaishvarya prasatanam chaye Pritta Chetasam. That's another verse in the Bhagavad Gita. That you're going to be overcome with Bhoga and Aishwarya. In other words, you're going to want opulence and want sense gratification. Bhoga, Aishwarya, Prasadam. One is attached to Bhoga and opulence. Taya Pritta Chetasam. His mind can never be fixed. He'll never be absorbed in Krishna consciousness. So that's one thing we can learn from this verse. So we respect Diti because she was really determined. She's a lot better than some of us who are not determined. Anyway. So, and her determination ultimately gave her Krishna consciousness. But Krishna in the Gita, not the Gita, in the Bhagavatam says, Agkama, Sarvakama, Moksha Kama Dharati. What is it? Tivrena Bhakti Yogena Yajeta Purusham Param. The advice is that if you have some material desire, then, or you're free of material desires, or you have no material desires, you just want to please Krishna, then you should engage in a focused devotional service. Tivra bhakti. Tivra bhakti. Tivra means like forceful, very determined devotional service. Tivena bhakti yogeni yajeta purusham param. So, in other words, you should focus, even if you have material desires, like Dhruva Maharaj had material desires, and other personalities have material desires, just focus it on Krishna. You know, if you want something, go to Krishna. We're not advocating that people should have material desires or approach Krishna for material things, but if you're going to have all these desires, just go to Krishna rather than to anyone else, especially, of course, here it's not a problem. Nobody goes to the demigods. So then, getting to the controversial subject matter here, where you have Diti bewitching her husband by serving him, there's an interesting statement. Too much devotion is the sign of a thief. Not only that doesn't only apply to interactions between men and women, you know, romantic things like this, but it applies to any situation where someone shows you all of a sudden a lot of devotion. For example, if you go into a place, let's say a car dealership. Do you have car dealerships here? You have salesmen? And the salesman shows a lot of devotion for you. Watch out, you're going to be cheated. I oftentimes give the example that there's one car dealership I've gone to before, and the salesman always remembers my name, even after about 40 years. Oh, Mr. Swami, how's the Swami family? And I said, of course, there's no Swami family. He says, how are you doing? And it's just like he's my best friend all of a sudden. And for you, we have this car. For you, there's no profit. So this is a sign of danger when someone all of a sudden is just like very devotional. Now, sometimes I apply this principle when I want something from someone. I have one of my godbrothers, not recently, but in the past that I've wanted to borrow some money from. So I would go to him and call him on the phone and tell him, you're the greatest sannyasi. You are the best preacher. I really appreciate it. I watch your classes all the time. It's so inspiring. It's a godbrother, not a guru. Anyway, and of course, after a few times he learned what I want from him. He said, all right, how much do you want now? I said, would I do that to you? So you have to be careful. So as far as the interaction between men and women, it also goes in the opposite direction too. Now sometimes you find these descriptions in the Vedic literatures where the lady is depicted as Maya, or an agent of Maya. And it appears to be a little imbalanced, isn't it? You think, I mean, I'm sure you ladies are thinking, what about us? I mean, we're just like Maya Devis. Is that our whole identity, is just being Maya Devis? And the men are thinking, you know, these are just Maya Devis. So the reason these descriptions appear to be a little imbalanced is because of the society in which these descriptions were written. I mean, you have to understand a little bit of the sociology of the Vedic culture. In this particular society, that is where the Vedic literatures were compiled and written like that, it was a society that was more, let us say, agrarian. Agrarian means it was in the forest, or in the, actually farming. Agrarian means farming. And so the women's duties in the agrarian society, and I'm not speaking about a modern society, which is different, because in each and every society there are different duties, I mean different cultures. You know, you can't impose, let's say, a culture that was existing thousands of years ago in the modern world. If you try to do that, it becomes really weird. You have to be practical. So in this particular society, the men would go out and, at least the Brahmin men would go out and earn a living by preaching. The women would stay home and take care of the children and take care of the house and everything like that. You know, it was very clearly delineated the different duties of the men and the women in that society. So the men would, men's business, the men would do the studying and the preaching, and the women wouldn't be engaged in that, and the women wouldn't take initiation in those days. In general, there's some exceptions to that rule. So therefore, you have the emphasis here on that particular society where the men were engaged in self-realization. And if you contrast that with today's society, where everybody can be engaged in self-realization, where everybody in today's society in general has to engage in economic development too, not only the men. I mean, those of you who are married may experience that both of the husband and the wife have to engage in making money to support a family. Yeah, I've seen that in so many cases. So it's a completely different scenario. So although this description is from the man's perspective of how the woman bewilders the man, also you can have the perspective from the women's perspective where the man bewilders the ladies. That's why Prabhupada said, for the man, woman is Maya, and for the woman, man is Maya. So Prabhupada understood the equality. So they both have a duty to be Krishna conscious. Both the man and the woman have a duty to be Krishna conscious. And they both have a duty to not try to drag the other person into illusion, because there's natural attraction between the man and the woman. As Prabhupada would say often, that men are like butter and ladies are like fire. So you put them together, you put butter and fire together, and you get ghee, right? That's why we have this. Rahastas are called Ghihastas. Sorry for that. That's my own invention. It's not Shastric. I'll be very clear about that. So why is this that we naturally can get controlled by someone who appeals to us or someone who serves us? You know, even if some man serves us, it's, you know, we'd get controlled by that. The reason for that is that we think we're the enjoyer, instead of understanding that everybody in this world, both men and women, or entities with male bodies or female bodies, both of these entities are prakriti, not purusha. That's very important to understand. We're not meant to enjoy. So if someone does some service for us, whether it's a man or a woman, or even a dog. A dog is a man's best friend, right? You know, people really love their dogs. It's interesting. I was giving a class about this. I just mentioned this, and, you know, people just, like, completely devoted their dog, and I got so many messages on the internet, don't criticize people who are devoted to their dogs. Why are they devoted to the dogs? Because the dogs are serving them. There's this interesting word in English, obsequious, that a dog is specially bred to always be ready to serve you. Just like it's described about Ditti here, that she was acting in an obsequious manner towards her husband, isn't it? Obsequious. Oh, whatever you want, dear, I'll get it for you. Oh, you want this? Oh, okay. Okay. There was an interesting conversation with Ma Bart about this. Between Satyabhama and Draupadi. Draupadi had five husbands. Five husbands? And Satyabhama only had one husband. And her one husband had another 16,107 wives. Because she was number 108, anyway. So, Satyabhama being, let's say, a left-handed wife of Krishna. Left-handed means a wife or a girlfriend who is not submissive. Anyway, but Krishna likes that. So she being a left-handed wife of Krishna, she's actually an expansion of Srimati Radharani. She was asking Draupadi, how do you keep your five husbands under control? I'd like to keep Krishna under control. What do you do? You know, what's your trick? What makeup do you put on? Or, you know, how do you wiggle your eyes? Or, you know, goggles, what else? And, or what black magic do you do? You know, whatever. So, Draupadi answered in a very interesting way. She said, that is for low-class women. He said, I don't want to control my husbands, but I, in order to serve them, because she understood everybody has a position of service, and her husbands also served her. She said, what I do is I wake up earlier than all my husbands and I go to sleep after them. So she's always there to help her husband. But she didn't do that with a objective to cheat her husband. She did that with an objective to serve. And whereas Satyabhama was looking for some, you know, trick. Of course, it's all a pastime. I understand that. And we do know in Krishna's pastimes in Dwarka that Satyabhama, she would sometimes nag Krishna to get what she wanted. There's that whole story. That when Satyabhama saw that Rukmini had gotten a Parijata flower, Satyabhama being envious, spiritually, this is not to criticize Satyabhama, that Satyabhama wanting the Parijata too asked for a whole tree. So Krishna was nagged by her. Usually that's not a good method to get what you want, to nag someone. Because when you nag someone, they actually don't want to hear from you anymore. You just, it's like someone calls you on the phone, texts you all the time. You just like block their phone calls and block their texts. So anyway, so Satyabhama was nagging Krishna in order to get a Parijata flower or a tree. And Krishna did it. He stole the Parijata tree. Firstly, there's an interesting story. He pleased the demigods first, who had the Parijata flower, by returning the earrings of Aditi, which had been kept by this Bhomasura, and also rescuing all those girls that were kept by Bhomasura. And then, 16,100 girls, and he returned the earrings and everything to Indra, and he asked Indra for a Parijata flower, tree, and Indra said no, and Krishna stole it. And then Krishna had to fight with all the demigods and defeat them in order to give Satyabhama the Parijata tree. So in this way, Krishna showed himself to be a little controlled by his wife, which is all right. Because In the spiritual world, Krishna is controlled by his devotees, which is really interesting. That's why that's the original form of which the interactions in this material world are perverted reflections. Just like you see this interaction between Diti and Kashyapa. This is a reflection, a perverted reflection of the interactions between Krishna and his pure devotees. Because the pure devotees, they control Krishna by their devotion. In fact, that's one of the qualities of Srimati Radharani, right? She always keeps Krishna under her control. And Krishna gets so much under her control that sometimes he has to bow down at her feet. I mean, if any of you are married and you have to bow down at your wife's feet and beg for forgiveness, you're in trouble. You're in trouble. That relationship is in trouble. Can you imagine that? I mean, I know it happens sometimes. The husbands go to the wife's feet and bow down. And Krishna, there's actually a place in Vrindavan, Manasarovara, where Krishna actually bowed down and cried and touched Radharani's feet and begged for forgiveness. So that's the original source of which the interactions in this material world are perverted reflections. So, the question is, how can we avoid being controlled by others, other than the spiritual master? Spiritual master should control you completely, but anyway, that's another issue. How can we avoid being controlled by these interactions, or bewildered or put in Maya by these interactions which are described here? By understanding that we are Krishna's servants. That's the way. And to be attracted, instead of being attracted to the, let's say, attractive features of this world, including the opposite sex, or for some people it's the same sex, being attracted to Krishna and Krishna's pastime. Just like that story that I often tell of this devotee, his name was Dhanur Das. And this is a story in Ramanujacharya's pastimes. The Dhanur Das was very much controlled by his girlfriend. And he was so much controlled by his girlfriend that he would walk with his girlfriend, but he would walk backwards. And the reason he would walk backwards was so that he could always look at her smiling face and he could hold an umbrella over her head. Like sometimes you see the disciples hold an umbrella over the head of the guru or something like that. So he was so enamored, controlled, that he would hold this umbrella over her head. And not only that, I think he also used a chamara. You know chamara? That's like the yak's tail that we use when we do RT. So he would go like, Sri girlfriend Sharana Padma, Kevala Bhakati Sadma, Bhagavi Sabranam. Anyway. It's like we were chanting to Prabhupada. So he would do that. And some of the brahmacharis, they made fun of him. That's definitely not the way to preach. You don't make fun of people who are in Maya. So their spiritual master, Sripad Ramanujacharya, was there at the same time. And Sripad Ramanujacharya told the brahmacharis not to make fun of this particular individual. He said, bring him here, I want to ask him a question. And Sripad Ramanujacharya asked him a question, and he said to Dhanur Das, why are you doing this? And Dhanur Das said, because she has such beautiful eyes. I mean, just thinking about it, like eyes, and what are eyes anyway? I mean, for example, sometimes we go to the eye doctor. The eye doctor looks at my eyes. I have a lady eye doctor. She doesn't get bewildered by my eyes, don't worry. So she looks at my eyes. It's just some mechanical device. Very complicated. More complicated than the scientists can completely understand. But it's just a mechanical device. It's like looking at a camera, becoming attracted to a camera. Imagine, you know, pull my phone out. Here's my camera on my phone. Wow. It's such a beautiful lens. Some people are like that, you know, oh, you got the latest iPhone. Wow, the camera's fantastic. So, I mean, it's hard for me to understand that. But anyway, so he was looking at her eyes and so attracted. There's even a song from the 1960s. Oh, what beautiful eyes, what great big beautiful eyes. Anyway, so he was asked by Ramanujacharya, why you're so attracted, and Ramanujacharya said to him, if I can show you someone with more beautiful eyes, will you come with me? And this Dhanadas said, wow, where is she? And Ramanujacharya said, come with me tonight. So that night, he took him to see the deity of Varada Dharaja. That's the wish-fulfilling deity in Kanchipuram. Anyone here has been to Kanchipuram? You've been to Kanchipuram. Wonderful deity. I mean, that's the deity who gave Ramanujacharya's disciple Kuresh back his eyes after his eyes were taken out by the king. That's a whole other story. So he went before the deity and he looked at the deity and he said, wow! Oh my God! And by seeing the deity, he did get married to his girlfriend. It's not that he told his girlfriend to go to hell or anything after that. He was dharmic. But by seeing the deity, he became so detached. There's even stories later on of how detached he and his wife became. More detached than the brahmacharis. Because Ramanujacharya had to confront these brahmacharis who were criticizing Dhanadas for being married to his wife. You know, sometimes the brahmacharis are like that. I remember in the early days of the movement, if someone, God forbid, got married, we thought, oh, we've lost them forever. They blew from the Hare Krishna movement. You know, this is the mood, because everybody was brahmacharya then. And basically, householders were just like, persona non grata, basically. If you know what that means. So the brahmacharis were making fun of this person, Dhanadasa, and Ramanujacharya wanted to show them how this couple was more detached than the brahmacharis. So one night, Ramanujacharya arranged that while the brahmacharis were sleeping, he switched all their belongings from one person to another. In other words, they were sleeping. In the old days, brahmacharis used to all sleep in one room on the floor. No beds, cushions, just like it's described in the Bhagavatam. What is the use of beds when there are earthly flats to lie on? What is the use of a pillow when you've got your arms? So we follow that. We used to follow that. We used to sleep on a grass mat. Anyway, so the brahmacharis, they would all sleep in one room, so Ramanujacharya switched the clothes from one brahmacharya to another. You know, there were like 30, 40 brahmacharis. When they woke up, they started fighting each other. Boom, why'd you take my clothes? I don't know if they punched, but they were yelling and screaming at each other. And then later on, Ramanujacharya, in order to display to the brahmacharis, or show the brahmacharis, that this couple was more detached than them, he arranged for one of the brahmacharis to steal the jewelry from Dhanadasa's wife while she was sleeping. You know, it's hard to imagine how you take someone's jewelry off of the body while they were sleeping, but anyway. And so basically, when they were taking the jewelry off the body, she turned over so that they would be able to take the jewelry from the other part of the body, the other half. But that scared off the brahmacharis. And Ramanujacharya, later on, told the brahmacharis to watch the conversation between Dhanadas and his wife. And in that conversation, Dhanadas was chastising his wife for not giving all the jewelry to the brahmacharis. So in other words, they became more detached than the brahmacharis simply by worshiping the deity, simply by appreciating the beauty of the deity. Of course, there's statements like that. If you at all desire to enjoy society, friendship, and love in this world, don't be going to see Krishna and playing on his flute in the Keshi Gata. You know, sort of a sarcastic statement. So, therefore, that's the solution. If we don't want to be controlled by the attractive features of this world, and it's not only men and women attractive features, there's so many attractive things. Like here, it's the winter in Slovenia, and you hear about the beaches somewhere else. Like, isn't it? It sounds attractive, isn't it? The nice beaches and the swimming and the shore. It sounds really nice. But we can overcome that attraction by simply being absorbed in Krishna's service. And also understanding our spiritual identity. You know, this the statement is there, Sarvapati Vanirbhuktam Tatvadatrena Niyamalam Rishikena Rishikesha Sevana Bhakti Uchite. That one identifies themselves as a servant of a servant of a servant of a servant of the Lord who maintains the gopis in Vrindavan, and no longer identifies yourself as the Purusha, the enjoyer. Krishna is the Purusha. We're Prakriti. Then you won't be enamored by anything. So there's something beautiful or attractive in this world. It's Krishna's the enjoyer. And we're meant to serve. And we're meant to give something to Krishna. You see something attractive to eat, or then it's meant to be given to Krishna. You see a flower, and you think of Krishna. So this is actually the solution. And unfortunately, or fortunately, in this particular case, Kashyapa was not on that level, and he became controlled by Viti's wiles. Wiles means her manipulation. So any questions or comments about these things? Questions, comments, arguments, problems? Yes?
I don't know if you have noticed, but I took the liberty and I left your piece of paper in the book in the Srimad Bhagavatam.
Oh, I noticed that, yeah. I thought it was someone else who had given a class and
no,
taken notes.
Actually, these are my two questions.
Wow.
From yesterday.
Yes, okay. I don't have time to answer all these questions.
Actually, there are only two questions.
Oh, okay. Can you?
One is about free will.
Okay.
And there are some quotes which are saying that the man can conclude that actually Jiva has no free will.
Okay, yeah.
There are 10 quotes. And the second question is regarding your statement yesterday that by giving the holy name to others, by serving the holy name, we can overcome the offenses to the holy name.
Mm-hmm.
So does this mean all 10 offenses, including blaspheming the devotees?
Well,
on the bottom
I mean, you have to, yeah, you have to stop committing the offenses. Let me answer the first question first. Okay. How about that?
Thank you.
So that's an interesting point, which I've had many discussions with devotees about this, about free will, because you have these statements, and I don't know if you quoted this particular verse here, that Nahi kaschit shanamapi jatatishtati akarma krit karyate yavaksa karma sarva prakriti jargunar. I don't think you quoted this verse, but that verse is actually more to the point of asking the question than the verses you quoted here. That verse states that everyone is forced to act helplessly according to the impulses born of the modes of material nature. So that's really getting to the point of your question. You have that verse in the Gita. Everybody knows that? That people are controlled by the three modes of nature, so therefore there's no free will. So the answer that Prabhupada gave to this, Prabhupada was actually asked the same question about free will and control the modes of nature. Prabhupada said, you pick your association And once you pick your association, there's another verse in the Gita. Karnam gunasangasha asadasa janma jonishu. Then you're associating with a particular mode of nature. In other words, we choose which mode of nature or modes combination that we're associating with. You have that amount of free will. Free will is not absolute free will, not absolute independence. You can't do anything and everything you want. Krishna has absolute independence. He is swarat, that's the Sanskrit word for absolute independence. And he's also up to kama, which means he gets anything he wants, whenever he wants. And so we are controlled at every moment by the modes of nature if we're not Krishna conscious. Let's just take that. So we do have choices even in the material world. We have the choice at every moment to be Krishna conscious. Now, the way that that choice is exercised is that if we desire spiritual life, Krishna sends a guru, or Krishna sends someone to give us instruction, or Krishna sends a book, the Bhagavad Gita. It's been translated by the language of Prabhupada. And we have a choice to accept it or not accept it. So you have limited choices. It's not absolute free will. And you have limited choices in the material world. You can choose to associate with the mode of ignorance, passion, or goodness. But once you do that, you're forced. Does that answer the question? So it's a very limited free will, whether in the material world or in the spiritual world. And based on that, you quote the verse here, Matak Smriti Gyanam Aponam Cha, that Krishna gives everyone remembrance, forgetfulness, and knowledge. But that's based upon one's desire. It's not that Krishna gives everyone the same remembrance, forgetfulness, and knowledge. Based upon what you want, another verse in the Gita, Yayatamam Prapajante Hamstataiva Bhajamiyam. Now, in Prabhupada's Gita, it's translated as they surrender unto me, I reward them accordingly. But the direct translation of that is Yayata Mam Prapajante Tamsatagra Bhajam. As they reciprocate with me, I reciprocate with them. So that intelligence, remembrance, and forgetfulness is given according to how one is reciprocating with Krishna or dealing with Krishna's energies. So, and then you have the other verse that was quoted yesterday, Ishvara Parama Krishna. And then, I don't see how these verses actually contradict the idea of limited free will, but Priti Purvakam Dadami Buddhi Yogam Tam Yenamam Upayantate. To those who will worship me, I give the intelligence to attain me. In other words, if you decide to worship Krishna, you get the intelligence. If you decide not to worship Krishna, you don't get the intelligence. I hope that answers that question. Or a second part. I mean, I could spend some time separately talking to you about these questions about free will. Offenses against the holy name can be nullified if one serves the holy name by giving it to others. Well, implicit in that statement was that one should stop committing the offenses against the holy name. And then, by serving the holy name and by serving others, then one can overcome the offenses. But obviously you have to stop blaspheming, like you mentioned here. Does that answer the question? Anyway, thank you for the nice questions. It's not that everybody types up their questions like this and thinks about them so clearly. Any other questions or comments about the topic of the class? Yes.
About gunas.
Gunas, yeah.
Question. My question is, what is the difference between mood of goodness and state of transcendence, to be transcendental,
Because, like example, if I am in anatinivrity, can I be transcendental for some times when I'm doing service, or I can be transcendental only after anatinivrity? And is this about my choice to be transcendental or?
The word anatinivrity means to be free from anarthas. You understand that? Anatinivrity, it's a stage in devotional service. You can be transcendental anytime you're absorbed in Krishna consciousness. You can be transcendental the first day you walk in the temple and you start chanting Hare Krishna. But then, an hour from then, you may not be transcendental. It's so you haven't arrived at the stage of nishtha yet. You understand nishtha? Nishtha means steadiness. According to Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, there are two stages of nishtha. One stage is your nishtha in your sadhana, but the rest of the day, all hell breaks loose. And the other stage is your nishtha 24/7. That's the higher stage of nishtha. So when you reach nishtha 24/7, then you're transcendental 24 hours a day. Now, as far as the difference between the mode of goodness, material mode of goodness and transcendence, is the material mode of goodness still has some tinge of passion or ignorance in it, very small tinge. But Shuddha Sattva means pure goodness, in which there's no self-centered desire. The self-centered desire comes from the mode of passion. That's all right? All right, any other questions or comments? Everyone's so quiet. Is it because of this? It's Saturday or the marathon's over or what? Questions, comments? Problems? My God. Anyway, thank you for the nice questions. And if you're interested, I can further elaborate on these things later on.
No, I have another one.
Okay, I'm sure.
Connected to this one. When you were talking about this too much devotion is a sign of it.
Yeah. Prabhupada said that, yeah.
I know. You're quoting Prabhupada. I know, I'm aware of this. But I know we are not in a position to judge, but if we see, like, there was an incident or anecdote, but somebody came in the early days when Prabhupada was still around.
Mm-hmm.
Someone came to the temple and he was, like, dancing like Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and he was showing the symptoms of ecstasy, and then Prabhupada just told to his disciples, just kick him in the head and you will see how high he really is. you heard about this?
Yeah, someone was actually rolling on the ground, not just dancing in ecstasy.
Yeah.
But he was rolling on the ground too. Prabhupada said, throw him out.
I heard Prabhupada said, kick him in the head.
Yeah.
So I would like to hear from you if some devotee is really like dancing, and what should we think about him?
Don't kick him in the head. What should we think about him? We should think that maybe he's in ecstasy. I'm not qualified to judge someone's consciousness. Maybe he's in ecstasy. I don't want to commit offense in my mind or offense any other way against such a person. I mean, if someone does something really weird, like if one of the devotees here starts rolling on the ground, just yelling out, Gauranga, 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 I would ask him to leave the temple room. Because it's creating a disturbance. I mean, one has to be careful. There's that story in Lord Chaitanya's pastimes that Devananda Pandit was giving a Bhagavatam class. You may know the story. And Srivastava Thakur walked by the Bhagavatam class, and he was hearing about Krishna, And Srivast Thakur just fainted on the ground and was rolling in ecstasy. And Devananda Pandit's disciples just threw him out of the Bhagavatam class. Then Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, after that point, criticized Devananda Pandit for offending Srivast Thakur. He said Devananda Pandit will never understand the Srimad Bhagavatam because he allowed his disciples to throw Srivast Thakur out of the Bhagavatam class. Later on, Devananda Pandit, you know, apologized to Srivast Thakur and everything became nice. So you have to be careful. I mean, I guess if someone starts rolling in ecstasy in one of my classes, you know, I guess I'll feel happy, you know, maybe I said something nice. Generally, the problem is that people fall asleep. And that's one of the symptoms of ecstasy. One of the 33 Vyabhachari Bhavas, but usually we don't see that in classes. Actually, there's a funny story. Prabhupada was giving a class one time in America, and the devotees had worked really hard to prepare the temple for Prabhupada. Wherever Prabhupada went, the temple always smelled like wet paint, because the devotees had painted, you know, 24 hours a day the last week. And so Prabhupada was sitting down in class, and everybody in class was sleeping. And Prabhupada looked up and he said, "This movement is going on only by Krishna's mercy." So, and there's another story about rolling on the ground in ecstasy. There's a story, maybe in the Chaitanya Mangala, in one of the books about Lord Chaitanya's pastimes. Once upon a time, there was a person who was chanting about Ananta, a song, you know, snake dance about Ananta or something like that. And then what happened is that Haridas Thakur came and heard this, and he started dancing and rolling on the ground in ecstasy, because Haridas Thakur is a pure devotee. And there was a Brahmin, and everyone appreciated, wow, what a nice devotee he is. And then there was a Brahmin who thought, boy, this Haridas Thakur, he's getting so much appreciation for dancing in ecstasy, I should just imitate him. So he goes in and he imitates him. And this person who was singing or conducting the music, he just basically kicked him. And the Brahmin said, "Why are you kicking me? You let Haridas Thakur do this and you appreciated him very much." And the person who was leading the kirtan said, "Because he had genuine ecstasy, you were just imitating for appreciation." So someone like Prabhupada could appreciate the difference. I wouldn't personally stick my neck out and think that I could understand what someone was feeling or whether they were pretending, unless it was extremely obvious. But definitely Prabhupada did say something like, I don't know if he said kick him in the head, but he did say kick him out. I know Prabhupada did say that. So, does anyone want to roll on the ground in ecstasy for us? Actually, when you see Pancha Tattva, you want to roll on the ground in ecstasy, isn't it? Dance in ecstasy. Prabhupada, and about dancing, that's very interesting. Prabhupada instructed us how to dance, and I very rarely see people dancing like the way Prabhupada instructed us. Prabhupada instructed us to dance with the arms raised and the Prabhupada step. You understand? One foot forward, the next foot back, one other foot forward, and another foot back.
The Swami step.
And it was so beautiful in the early days, because you had the men on one side of the temple, the women on the other side. I'm not saying other types of dancers are. They were okay too. But everybody was swaying like that. It was like, it was beautiful. Everybody was swaying. And now you see, sometimes in our teachers, everybody's just like, we used to call that a wallflower. I don't know if you know what a wallflower is. You know what a wallflower is? That's if someone goes to a dance and they just sit in the back. because they're too shy to ask someone to dance with them. Anyway, this is called the wallflower. So now I see him dance. I mean, not to criticize anyone, because I don't want to commit offenses against all the great bicyclists. But I see that, you know, devotees, they just, it mostly just shuffled during some of the kirtans. Isn't it? I mean, I was thinking like that during Tulsi worship this morning. That it's so ecstatic. You're just praying to Tulsi Dev, please make me a resident of Vrindavan. Let me see with my eyes, Nayane, with my eyes the beautiful pastimes of Radha and Krishna. I mean, it's just like, I'm not saying that I'm feeling ecstasy, but it just makes me feel ecstatic when I think about it. The meaning of the prayers, doesn't it? What do you think? Pleasure grows at Vrindavan, you know. Ene Vaini, Anadada, Sagira. Make me a Saki, no. Or assist the Sakis. And then it's just like, wow. I don't see how anyone could just go, all right. Namo, namo. Philosophy, Krishna, Hare Krishna. If you're aware of what you're chanting, when you're chanting it, you'll actually become much happier. One of the reasons we're not experiencing ecstasy is we're doing things ritualistically, Niyamagraha. You know, we're chanting, this is the Tulsi prayer. And now it's time for the Samsara prayer. The word samsara means the prayer for material entanglement. So it's guru vashita. It's not a samsara prayer. So if you actually think about what you're chanting, then life becomes much more ecstatic, and then we will have some people dancing and rolling on the ground in ecstasy. So thank you for bringing up that point. So I think we have to end because it's time for the most ecstatic part of the day, which is eating prasada. All glories to Divine Grace. Shrila Prabhupada, Shrila Prabhupada, Ki Jai.